Ryland Walker Knight. We're back after a little break there. It's Vinyl Is Podcast number 3, and I'm once again joined by Mark Haslam.
Hello.
And a lot has happened since we last talked at the internet, and I've seen a lot of movies, and I've made some movies that you may have seen on Vinyl Is Heavy, and
I got hit by a car.
Right. Yeah, that is a big event.
That happened.
Sounds painful. It looks painful.
It was. It was painful. But I'm pretty doped up, and.
And we're jiving on a lot of coffee right now.
Yeah. So we got the uppers, the downers, the ibuprofen, all that going through my body.
Right. Right. That was a Sunday night, right?
That was last Sunday. And I was sort of worried, and one of the main things that I was worried about in the hospital was I had a ticket to see Synecdoche, New York the following night, and being in the hospital sort of reminded me of that film. I'd already read the script, and I know it's a lot about hospitals and disease, and so I was thinking about that and how I'd be really bummed if I missed it. I didn't miss it. I took enough painkillers to make it down to the theater. I got a ride and. I saw the film.
Yeah, and you mostly liked it, right?
I liked it enough to not have an opinion of it right away. Right. I like a lot of it. I really loved the script. I think
you had read the script before you saw it.
Before
right?
I saw it, yeah. I had read the script earlier this year. Which I normally don't like to do for films, but I think for Charlie Kaufman, I've always kind of thought of him as he's a screenwriter, So there's something about just his writing itself, which is really enjoyable.
Right. I think we've talked about this a little bit, about how that's my worry for Synecdoche, New York, is that he's too committed to the word, and he's not much of an image maker.
Yeah. I mean, some of the images are pretty beautiful, but I think he lacks it lacked a sort of pacing or there's a definite pacing to his writing,
right?
But that doesn't always translate very well to a film, especially when you're trying to get it picked up by a distributor and make it sort of digestible to people. I felt that it should have actually been longer. I know I was talking to you about this before, a lot of it's about it's about time. You sort of immediately lose your sense of time. And one of my favorite moments early is they're initially in October, and he goes to the doctors for one of his many illnesses or ailments that arise over the course of the film. And the calendar that's framed very nicely with his head is it says March. And I thought that was a really nice sort of subtle way of introducing us to this idea that time doesn't really have a place in the film, or its place is one of a completely lighter, sort of fucked up time,
like falling through your fingers
kind exactly of exactly. But after that, the sort of timing becomes it gets into the structure so much that everything becomes so jumbled that you don't even necessarily get a sense of time being fucked up or being fucked with. It's more just you're kind of thrown from event to event.
So did you think it sort of reduced itself to schematics or programmatic kind of things?
Kind of, yeah. I feel like Kaufman in his previous films is always investigating his own structure,
right?
Whereas this one didn't have that sort of eye towards the structure. It did the same structural. It had a lot of the same structural moves,
right?
And it was conscious of its structure,
right?
But it didn't want to sort of take that magnifying glass to the sort of effects of having a structure. I mean, and it's interesting too for a film that's about death. I mean, structure is sort of a death in itself, or it encodes a death that there will be a beginning and an end. It's very.
Does he use any formal, I don't know if this spoils anything. I don't really care, but there's a warning for you. You said that the film fades out. Does he use the fade more in the film? Does he use
There's
any kind of tricks or cinematic things like that, or?
the fade that the film ends on a fade, but there aren't it, the fade isn't a huge part of it. I mean, we saw The Mother and the Whore, and I think the fade is a huge part of that film.
Right.
But
And Mes Petites
and maybe,
Amoureuses,
yeah, exactly.
which we saw last night, which was a beauty.
But yeah, I mean, both of those I think use the fade very, I mean, amazingly and with great effect and affect. But it's not so much. That's not so much one of the techniques I think he uses
Is it a lot of more just like elliptical editing, like cutting out of stuff and just skipping through time more?
It's very much a skipping through time. I mean, people will the only the this is this one of the problems I had was that the only sense of time you have is when people announce that more time has passed than we're actually conscious of. In the trailer, you'll see one of the characters saying, you know, when are we going to get an audience in here? It's been 16 years or however long. And I mean, it's funny, but you don't actually have that sense of that time having been passed, which I guess is interesting.
That's sort of what I was saying about Zodiac last year, that movie could have been twice as long and I would have loved it even more probably. I think that's what, makes something like The Mother and the Whore or Out One, which we saw together last year. So, I mean, they're doing different things with time, clearly, but
I know, well, and I think too of Berlin Alexanderplatz, which has this. I mean, the thing I love about that film, or that series, television series, whatever you want to call it, is that, I mean, and this sort of, I guess, relates. I could do a melodrama thing on it if I was brave enough to write on the film, which I'm not.
Yeah, maybe someday, and maybe you can get paid for
Exactly. That would be nice. But it's I mean, that film is a melodrama in its sort of form and structure, but it has this sort of pulsating, very steady rhythm to it that it's I mean, you notice things like that it's almost intrusive, like clocks in the background, the ticking of a clock. Everything
That's
is
cool.
it sort of intrudes upon any sort of like building up to something, or it's only ever a building up to something.
There's
And
no
it
release. I haven't seen Berlin Alexanderplatz.
The release when it comes is it's not like a release that you would expect. There's very little that's therapeutic about it. It's almost threatening in its those moments of release, or when those moments of melodrama actually happen. I mean, the film is always signaling melodrama, especially with music. It's always there will be like a big music cue to something that's where on the screen nothing's really happening. Like someone's turned around in a chair. But I mean, that's one of the things that I think demand. I mean, it demanded that much time in order to really get that effect. And then once the melodramatic thing happens, it doesn't seem like anything at all. Which I mean, and I'm not going to say that I wanted Synecdoche to be 15 hours long, but you know, I think I mean there were things that were cut out of the script. I'm not sure if they filmed them ever, but
I mean, probably, but yeah. It hasn't been picked up. I don't think it got picked up in Toronto after it didn't get picked up in Cannes, so.
And I mean he's doing this hoping maybe to get I think you know good press and audience reactions. I mean I think it should be released. I mean at least, you
Definitely.
know.
And, it's got all these names. It probably will be.
Yeah, I would be very surprised.
But at the same time, it's kind of great in a way that something like Ballast, Lance Hammer's movie, he's self-releasing it in New York right now, and he's just doing it. I mean, I haven't seen it. I really want to. My friend Stephen Boone, hello, if you're out there listening. He told me that he thinks it's a really gorgeous film, and he thinks that's a pretty heroic thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, I'm very curious to see how all that plays out because it doesn't sound as much as we may find. I mean, you as much as you may have or other people who saw it at Cannes may find problems with it. It is gonna be one of the more interesting, daring American films.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things, I mean, to say positive things about it, or at least interesting things, I think one of my, I always loved the title, Synecdoche. I don't know. I mean, especially having, it was sort of fun after, once you know the title and then you're reading it, you get to sort of like look for those synecdoches. I mean, I think he has a great way of calling attention to things that are very banal and that you experience every day as being sort of synecdotic. I don't know, of being synecdoche of your life, like shit. Like there's parts where like Philip Seymour Hoffman is poking at his feces in the toilet, and it's like, oh wow, what an interesting way of thinking about synecdoche as like that being a synecdoche of yourself, you know. And of course, like the city that you're living in, and like creations, your own sort of creations as being synecdoches. One of the things that I thought was especially interesting that I think I talked to you before about is, I mean, if you think of a lot of people take fault with, I don't know. I don't know who these people are, but I feel like in poetics, there's a general tendency to favor like metaphor over metonymy, because metonymy is about a single correspondence. It's about this thing means this, whereas metaphor is more, I think, open to analysis. It's more
I don't
kind of.
know. I mean, metonymy can point in a few directions, I
Right.
think.
I think metonymy can, I think metonymy is a very I know like someone like Raymond Chandler used metonymy incredibly. And I think Kaufman actually does it very interestingly too, or that in such a way that
Yeah, I think
he
somebody in the blog, sorry, I cut you off,
That's
but
right.
I think somebody in the blogosphere, I don't remember right now because I'm never prepared, but somebody was complaining about Kaufman hijacking, I think, oh, maybe it was Michael, the academic hack. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your name. Michael Szczyński. I think he was saying, and I could be wrong about this. Jesus, I'm rambling. He was complaining about Kaufman hijacking the word synecdoche, and I like him. I think this is what he was saying. He was saying that when I think about that, I think about metonymy, and I think about Bresson, and I think about these like little moments of impressions and sensation through like the filling of a gas can in Laocoon or something like that. All the hands, just all so many hands and feet, and little doors closing.
Well, and it's hard not to think of every moment in cinema as metonymic. You know, I mean, an image is sort of meta. I mean, it's always metonymic, right? Because it's sort of like an artifice of reality that's representing that same thing in reality. So, I mean, it's. I mean, I can totally. I mean, I think the thing I like about Synecdoche, New York is it's not just Synecdoche. It's Synecdoche, New York. So it's
And it's a
already.
joke about New York, New York.
Exactly. I mean, it's that's I think that's very fun. And I think that's one of the things that I like about his handling of it is that he wants to, he inhabits these moments of synecdoche or metonymy in such a way that he doesn't allow them to just be that. Not like they ever would just be that, but that he doesn't allow you to think of them as just that. He sort of he like prolongs your experience with them, or he like I don't know what word I'm looking for, but he's just sort of in them for so long that they become other things. They become not just.
There's more investment. I mean, I've also seen a lot of the Zsa Zsanka films. I mean, I've seen all of them at the PFA since the last podcast. And the last one I saw was The World. And it's such an ironic movie about all these cliches, and then but then how, you know, how cliches then get appropriated by the circumstance, the context that they're in, and then the investment from people. I mean, that seems to be the argument in still life too. I mean, that's such about so much a movie about objects, but I'm losing my train. But I think what's cool about that idea, as we're, I don't, it's so hard for me to talk about synecdoche because I haven't seen it. But the idea that I'm just attracted to that idea that, you know, you make the referent real in a way, just by looking in still life and by this weird park in the world. And I know you haven't seen those either, so then that makes another disconnect. So why don't we talk about something we have seen
There we
together,
go.
which relates. We can start with The Mother and the Whore, which is the Eustache film that I was said I was afraid of on the last podcast. And I realized I didn't need to be afraid of it at all. I think you share similar.
Yeah, it was. It, I mean, it was such an enjoyable experience, I
Yeah,
think.
somehow. I mean, as much as it's, solipsistic and narcissistic, which is another relationship to Charlie Kaufman, and all those traps, I was afraid of seeing myself, and I did, I'm not gonna lie, I am selfish. I do bad things sometimes to people I love. I'm not Alexander, that guy that Jean-Pierre Léaud plays in the movie. I'm not. No, if any, I mean, I guess Jean Eustache. That's a lot of him, but I hope not too many people see themselves that much in it. But yeah, it there's so much to enjoy. It's a phenomenal film, really.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. I mean,
To take it back to the metonymy or the hands, like there's it's such a movie. It seems so steeped in silent cinema. His cinema in general seems so much about documentary, like the documentary aspect of the image and the materiality in that respect. And there's all these shots of people turning music on or turning on a record or a radio. And I mean, there's some sex. But all those little shots made me think of Bresson, but I'm writing something about it. I hope to finish soon. And like I've been trying to argue in that, I don't really have the constellation for Eustache quite that, somebody like Jonathan Rosenbaum has, of course, because I'm not I was born in the 80s, early 80s. And I haven't seen a Maurice Pialat film. I have only seen Claire's Knee. I know Gorel a bit from Regular Lovers and Le Vent de la Nuit, which I saw on the Auteurs. They're in their beta. It's a website. It's cool. I write for the Auteurs Notebook. There's a plug. I don't know if that's necessary at all, but it's really cool. And you can go watch that movie. And I recommend you do because it's really Catherine Deneuve is amazing. I don't remember who the actor is, but he the really sad guy is really great. And Gorel, I guess I see the most consonance between Gorel and Eustache and this idea of presence, the person feeling very present to the image. And then I bring up Romer because Mother and the Whore is such a motor mouth movie. It's which is different than Mes Petites Amoureuses, which is, restraint and silence. But Mother and the Whore, it's also more of a monologue kind of thing. So I don't know how much that overlaps with Romer. I think Romer is much more about conversations.
I like Cassavetes as sort of a talking point too. I mean,
Yeah,
I think they're very
definitely.
different, but
Yeah,
they
their approach to mise-en-scène is very different, but that definitely that image of presence during tears on the face, that big monologue.
it's so good.
Yeah, and yeah, I hope to write some more about it. And we saw Mes Petites Amoureuses last night, which is kind of a, I don't know, in a way, a left turn. It's like half as long or something. It's in color.
It's more, I don't want to say it's more traditional because it's not really, but
Yeah.
it sort of presents itself as though it might be in
Yeah,
the very
and
beginning.
it's the only like standard feature length film he made. I'm still sort of washing in it. I don't have my argument set except for like it's pretty gorgeous. And the only thing I wrote down, because we were with a bunch of people, we had to just sort of get out of there. The only thing I wrote down after the movie was that everything ends. Like he's so much about cycles, but there are terminal points, it seems, and certain
Well,
shifts.
that sort of relates to I had to defend the film. I don't, well, not defend the film, but defend elements of the film to some of my friends who I saw it with, Rylan not being one of them.
Yeah, we parted ways there.
And one of the things we were talking about is the sort of the course the main character takes. He's a young boy at the beginning and the end, And it's like, did he, what really happened to him in the course of the film? And
Yeah.
I mean, I think Eustache is very much, I mean, one of the things I said was that he's, from the two films I've seen, he seems very much against like the event in one's life, or like the event being a all capitals underlined sort of thing. I guess some sort of epiphany that you might
Right.
see in other coming of age stories, which always seems very false and very, there isn't any moment in one
Well,
person's life where like, oh, I was a boy and now all of a sudden I'm a man. It's interesting because it's the same boy who plays the main character at the beginning and the end. And the beginning and the end, we see him surrounded by this group of friends, these young kids, where, but in the beginning he seems very much a part of that group, and at the end, after he's gone through, a lot,
yeah.
he seems completely different.
Oh
There's
yeah.
something, there's a new.
I mean, there's a lot of more, a lot of basic things that change. Like
Right.
he's he starts making out with girls. He starts smoking cigarettes. He starts working and not going to school. I mean, there's a lot of silly, one way to look at it, silly tropes of coming of age, but that doesn't feel that way at all. It's a much more smart movie. I think that gets at the structure thing we were talking about with Kaufman, the thing that like he's so, both those films resist a certain kind of resolution of structure in a way. There's cycles, but it isn't programmatic at all. Like it just sort of, I mean, I'm tempted to use the word flow just 'cause I'm a goofball into water like that, but it's so much more about, I mean, it just feels natural, more natural. That's what it gets down to. I think that's what, you know, a lot of cinephiles will tell you, is that the problems we have with schematics in films, or what we see as schematics. I think I used that. I talked against that word being applied to Happy-Go-Lucky last episode, because I don't think that. I mean, I could see that argument definitely, but I think the argument of like, oh, that's schematic, is definitely one that just, it feels like too much structure. And it doesn't play with, it doesn't move between structure and chaos. I mean, it goes back to, exiling poets, all that jazz from Homeboy back in the day. But I've strayed us.
That's all
Sorry.
right.
But yeah, no. What else should we say about this? I don't know.
It's hard. I mean, they're still sort of gestating in us, but
Yeah, I think we're both trying to. You're going to try and write something about Synecdoche, right?
yeah,
Okay,
I would like
cool.
to.
And I know you've seen On Dangerous Ground recently,
Yeah,
after
actually
my glowing pres. My.
watched it a couple times
Oh,
since
yeah?
then. Yeah, and it's,
Awesome.
I mean, it's that movie. There's that has such an amazing. I think you've mentioned this before, but I'm still trying. I don't know what to make of the switch between handheld and like stationary or like very composed shots, because there are moments when it just switches into this handheld sort of rough
Yeah, like the
look.
car crash.
The car crash, or that moment, it's I don't know why I'm spacing on the main detective's name, but he the Robert Ryan character, he right before he's sent up north to Siberia, as he says, they find this woman getting beaten up or murdered. We don't really have any closure on what happens there, but it just switches into like a handheld of him chasing these guys through this alley, and you sort of completely lose sense of the bodies, of which body belongs to which character.
And
And
that's in that
they're,
weird back alley or something,
yeah, where
right?
it looks like this labyrinth of sorts.
Right.
And then we switch back into like a very composed shot of Robert Ryan approaching the criminal and
Right.
beating him up.
And then getting harangued by his cohort, right?
Which is, I mean, it's very weird. I mean, the camera floats between that, like occupying, a perspective, and then switching back to that very genre detached, or that very sort of noirish detached sort of perspective.
Right.
And I mean, and to inhabit, like it does, it again inhabits the perspective of what's her name? Ida
Ida Lupino.
Ida Lupino, yeah, who's blind or almost blind in it. And like we often get these like shots that are just like completely out of focus.
Right. Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, they're incredible. I mean that's a film that I've been trying to write on for a while, and
Yeah, there's a lot happening
yeah,
there.
it's a pretty stunning film,
Yeah, I'm
I gotta
happy
say.
I saw it. I'm glad you saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, that my found facts episode about Telluride, I think, is very much about on dangerous ground. Like that little bit of Zizek talking is him talking about the movie, that movie afterwards. I was able to steal some of that and hold it forever. But I mean, I don't know. The episode's about passage and travel. So I don't know, call it an episode or a little mini movie, whatever. But I was really excited to make that and then see that form emerge out of the footage I did have. And yeah, I mean, it's my favorite so far of all the ones I've made. I don't know if that actually came through after you saw On Danger, after you saw the short thing, but
Well, I mean, definitely the cuts to driving, and I mean
yeah.
those are so present in
Yeah.
On Dangerous Ground.
Yeah. It's that movie is too good.
It is.
But another thing we saw Unknown Pleasures together.
That's right. That's right.
And that movie seems so much about a movement between stasis and mobility. I mean, it opens with a mobile shot, just I forget the characters' names, but the kind of good one.
But he's just kind of going in a circle.
Yeah,
You
he's.
know, he's not really, it doesn't really seem like he, I mean, he's kind of moving with the traffic.
Yeah.
And then at the end we have the escape sort of
Yeah,
that
it's.
literally breaks down.
Right. Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
It's too good.
It's a really smart movie. I think I probably like the world better. I mean, the world is just like that movie's just pure pleasure. I kind of as I had a weird experience seeing it, but it was really. I'm gonna get it. I got it from Netflix so I can watch it again because I feel about that movie, like pure pleasure watching that movie the same way I got sort of not really the same, but a similar kind of like so many things are happening that I'm able to respond to. As something like On Dangerous Ground or In the City of Sylvia, which I saw in May. Yeah, it's in a way, it's like a parody of everything we love about art films in a way. It's like it's stuff in the Eustache too, all these frames. Actually, it's not like Eustache at all. It's more like Antonioni, all these voids and plenums that are sort of inflecting one another, and all these people walking through frames, and the last reel of the world is just fucking gorgeous. Just like so many woofs and echoes, and just things speaking to one another in a really seductive, beautiful, poignant way. I hope to write about that too.
I have to put that on my Netflix.
Yeah, no, there's too many things to see, always.